Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. How to describe Deborah Koningsberger? Let me count the ways. Wife, mother, risk-taker, successful businesswoman, role model, mover, shaker, life-changer. That's going to have to do for now. Retail is what Deborah knows and loves. With no formal schooling or training, she started from the ground up, working as a salesperson, assistant manager, and so on, until 1989, when she opened up Noir and Blanc on Manhattan's West 23rd Street, long before the block became a trendy place to shop. Her boutique sold fashion-forward yet classic European collections. A walk through the neighborhood park with her young sons in 1994 proved to be a seminal moment in Deborah's life. It was there she saw a homeless woman and her daughter sleeping in a box. The image stuck, and it prompted Deborah to take action. A year later, she founded Hearts of Gold. The nonprofit works to provide sustainable changes in the lifestyles and levels of self-sufficiency for homeless mothers and their children. Then, in May 2010, she opened Thrifty Hog. Hog as in Hearts of Gold. The upscale resale boutique sells chic, new, and gently used and vintage clothing, as well as home decor items. 100% of the proceeds go to Hearts of Gold. More than 30,000 families have been on the receiving end of Deborah's dedication and hard work. So, let's meet this creative, classy, committed woman. Deborah Koningsberger, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's travel back in time. You're 11 years old. I read that that's the year that you moved to the States from Jamaica. You're moving not around the block, but to a different country. What was that like for you?
Well, because I came here in June, it was actually very exciting because it was summertime and, you know, my parents took us to Asbury Park and Atlantic City and all the rides and stuff that we weren't used to. And it was great. It was quite fun until September came and we started school and the weather changed and it got cold. And then I was miserable and I just wanted to go back to my sunny island in the Caribbean. But, you know, a few months later, cousins of mine came up. And so it wasn't just my brother and myself anymore. You know, we had family, cousins, kids mm-hmm. our age, and we kind of learned to, you know, be excited about the snow instead of worrying about how cold we were in our little Catholic school uniforms.
Where my parents moved to,
I grew up in the Bronx.
It really had to be a culture shock, separate from the weather, didn't it?
I didn't really notice the culture shock because I was 11 and I didn't really think a lot about the tall buildings. I thought about no backyards and no trees and, you know, mm-hmm.
Because and no I came friends, from maybe
and no friends, my, you know, left my friends in school. I was really happy, though, because my mom and dad had been here for a few years and I missed my parents. So I was mm-hmm. really happy to be with my parents.
To be reunited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was very just very exciting to have my own mom back and my own dad back. And, you know, and I had my brother and we were each other's playmates. And like I said, cousins came a little bit later. And so.
And children are flexible yeah. and adaptable.
Yeah. That's what you do. You do. You kind of jump in. And my parents kept us very busy knowing that, you know, they had kind of pulled us away from all of that. So they took us everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I went to see my first Broadway show. I saw Stephanie Mills in The Wizard of, you know, The Wiz.
And, in The Wiz, yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, just so many exciting things were happening all the time. So it was great.
So how did you get into fashion? Why did you get into fashion?
I got into fashion in a way that I kind of call a fluke, except I don't really believe in them, so I guess it's just my journey.
It was meant to be.
Yeah. I modeled for years when I was younger, and I kind of always had a knack for what to do with clothing. You know, when I would be a fit model and they would put things on me, I always had an idea about where a button might go or where a zipper might go or what might fit better.
Wait, I'm going to stop you. A fit model means that you're there and the designer is
pinning, literally pinning the clothing on you to get the perfect fit, the perfect cut, you know, the way they want it to
look. How did you wind up being a fit model?
I mean,
I was never asked to be a fit model.
Well, a friend of a friend of the family was a designer, and she had a small company that she'd started, and she was making a lot of clothes for local people. And she asked me one day, and I was I used to get teased about my long arms, but I have broad shoulders and long arms mm-hmm. and like no hips. So I was like the hanger. And so she asked me one day just to, you know, she said, hey, I'm going to use you to put some stuff on and pin it. And her name was Chris Angie. And as it turned out, she then used me a lot for, you know, just fitting model, you know, doing the stuff. And then she would do fashion shows. And it started just kind of locally in the neighborhood. And then when I went to college, I went to NYU. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to travel. I wanted to do a junior year abroad. And my, you know, my parents couldn't really afford for me to go study in Paris and whatever. So we figured out and they said, okay, if you want to, I said, I can work. I was able to get connected to someone who I went to school with, whose mom had a fashion clothing company in Paris. And they said, okay, we can give you work. You know, we can, you can definitely model for us and do the shows. And the trade shows were around. And she introduced me to her mom when her mom came to New York. And then, you know, with my parents, we figured out what we could afford. And mm-hmm. if I earned X, then, you know, it would be possible. And so I started doing a lot of shows here. You know, people just kind of asked me to do stuff because they would see me doing something else. I wanted to be, in a perfect world, a simultaneous translator. Hmm. And I wanted to do languages and I wanted to travel the world. And I met this French woman who was incredibly, fabulously beautiful, glamorous, and so smart. And she was my, you know, kind of idol. I was like, oh my God, I want to be like her. And so being like her meant she traveled the world. She translated for diplomats. And I kind of thought, okay, that's what I want to do. And I realized I had a knack for, I have an ear for languages.
How many do you speak?
I speak four. French, Italian, German, and English. Started using my languages, hoping to get a job at the UN when I graduated college. But somehow, you know, life has a way of playing its own role in your life. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of... So fell into retail because this friend of mine was working at a store on Madison Avenue, and he was French. And it turns out that when the French army calls, you must go. And he had been living here for about 7 years, but all of a sudden his parents got the letter that he had to show up for the army like the next week.
Wow.
And so Mikhail had to go back to France, and he was running the store on Madison Avenue, and I got to know his boss, who was French, and he had a French boss and a Brazilian boss. And I got to know them through just going by and hanging out and picking up Mikhail from work and so on. And so
at that time, were you out of school or you still were in school?
I was a senior. So Mikhail basically said, you know, his boss said to me, look, you know, he's leaving us. We have nobody. Can you jump in? You know, can you help out a little bit while we look for somebody else? And it turns out they never ended up looking for somebody else. I jumped in. I loved it. I kept doing it. At the same time, got the interview at the UN and, you know, left. I worked there for about 9 months to a year. And it was fun working there because I was using all my languages because it was on 61st and Madison.
And very international.
And, you know, the Pier Hotel, the Plaza Hotel, all the tourists, all that, you know, would come around the corner.
A successful boutique?
But it was a great boutique. It was a real eye-opener for Madison Avenue then because there was nothing on Madison Avenue that wasn't extremely conservative, high-end, stuffy, you know. Mm. And this store was owned by a Brazilian who brought Brazilian bikinis and a French guy, two young guys, very, very avant-garde, you know, forward-thinking guys. And the fashions were just like so...
People out there.
People were just like, what is this? Mm. What has hit Madison Avenue? But in a great way. They were, you know, all the clients who shopped and had younger kids who were looking for something a little bit more edgy were thrilled with our store, and our store took off and was like a huge success. So, you know, from working there and using my languages every day, I was just having a great time, and I modeled all the clothing in the store every day, and we were just, it was great. It was like all my worlds were, you know,
colliding and making sense.
So I got the job, went to the interview.
For the UN,
you mean? For the UN. Mr. Srinivasan gave me that job, you know, left the boutique, and I started working there. And the job that I initially had, the place where I had to start was, the starting point was basically translating messages and putting them in people's mailboxes.
Oh, that's
and
a little
me,
dull, right?
Well, you know, especially since I realized I'm a real people person and I just love to be out there. And, you know, so I just decided it wasn't for me to get to where I wanted to get to. It would take about 3 to 5 years to really, you know, kind of do the
to pay your dues.
Take all the steps, pay all the dues, you know, do all of that. And I was too excited. I was young. I was excited. I needed to go. I needed to move. I needed to do stuff. Mm-hmm. I needed to make things happen. I wanted to travel. I didn't want to, you know. So I very reverently went in and spoke to Mr. Srinivasan and said, you know, thanks. I know I probably took this opportunity from a lot of people, but, you know, it's just not where my heart is. And he was very gracious and said, you know what? You're young. Follow your passions. Go do what you want to do.
Wonderful.
And I went back to the store. And then from that store to several other stores, I would just work, earn money, travel, go to Europe, come back. I just had this great, fun life, and I was using my languages. And then finally, I ended up in a position where I became a partner in one of the stores, in the last store that I worked in. And I was there for about 5-6 years, and then decided that my calling, I was really just bursting at the seams to do something myself. I really was in a position where it was just like, I wanted a lot more independence, and, you know, being a partner in the store meant that I was like kind of chained to this store, mm-hmm, and I wanted mm-hmm. to just, you know,
your
do
freedom.
Other things. So I kind of took the dive on a dime, basically, because I didn't have anything, and talked to my mom about, you know, hey, want to try to do this thing on my own. Of course, had no money. Neither did my parents. And my mom, you know, basically took the next day off from work. God rest her soul. What an amazing mom I had. Went to the bank, went to Chase, got $29,500 mortgage off that house and said,
wow.
This is what we've got. As, you know, luck would have it and chance and life and your path and all of those things that I believe in. I had a friend who was a manager of Helmsley Spear property at the time and basically said, okay, you know, I have a space that has been closed up for a while and if you want to give it a shot, you know, we'll work with you. And I basically said, well, I have nothing to work with. And he's like, don't worry about it. We got, you know, and he'd known me for a long time and he knew I was a person of integrity and he, you know, wanted to help me. And he thought, let's just give it a go. The space is empty anyway. Turns out that that space we gave a go and I was 23 years later, you know, still, I just moved out of that space 2 years ago. So my first store, Noir et Blanc, which was on 23rd Street.
Which is black and white.
Black and white in French, mm-hmm. yeah, on 23rd Street. And then again, as life would have it, I was on vacation in Greece, met my now husband, who's German, who lived in Germany, and I lived here. And so we did this kind of back and forth for a year. Then we got engaged. Then he moved here after a year. My buying for my store, I buy in Italy, I buy in France, I buy in Germany. So I'm using all my languages all the time. And it's just amazing how my entire in-law family is German and live in Germany. And so my German is, you know.
You also have a place to stay when you get.
I have a lot of places to stay and a fabulous, fabulous German family. And yeah, so.
But wait a minute. Hold on here. You start this store right. and you make it seem so simple. What was your bent? What did you want to sell? You did this all by yourself? I mean, obviously your mom was, you know, instrumental here, but I mean, were you just this one woman band? Yeah. I mean, what did you do?
So, okay, so here's what
happened. This overwhelms me.
Well, you know, I think that when you're 26 years old and you think you're smarter than you know everything, you just don't think about those things. And I certainly was that person who thought, I can do anything, right? So I get a space. I realize I know nothing about retail. I know nothing about retail except selling clothes. I know how to put clothes on people. I know how to dress a woman. But I don't know how to buy. I don't know the quantities. I don't
sure.
know. There's all this stuff I don't know. I don't know about business as in, you know,
starting my own.
Starting, you know.
Yeah.
And so my friend who gave me the space basically said, okay, here's what we're going to do. I've got a contractor. He's going to build you out a space. He'll talk to you. He builds retail spaces all the time. And you're going to, so I worked with him because I, having been in all these stores, knew, you know, okay, I need this to look like that, blah, blah, blah. Went to the garment center and so many angels along the way who would say, you know, I'd go in and I'd go, okay, I knew lines because of course I'd sold them. So I would go up to the showrooms and say, okay, I'm opening a store. And back then it was a lot easier and different than it is now, you know. Basically, with my $29,500, I paid nothing. He allowed me not to leave any security deposit. He allowed me not to pay rent for the first 3 months. You know, they just gave me all these gifts and he said, you'll catch up, which with the grace of God, I did in short order. But I kind of just jumped in. I'm the kind of girl who jumps in and then figure out, oops, I can't swim. I better, you know, do something. Or I want to drown here. So, but I'm very determined and I come from that kind of stock. And I just decided, you know, failure was not an option. So I just went in there every day. The minute I opened that store, it took off and I never looked back. I was selling out of merchandise so fast. I had no idea about reorders and what to do. I would just call up these girls in the showroom, was panicked and go, okay, I have no more size 10s. All right, well, come over and get a bag and we'll give you some more. I winged it. I winged it a lot for about 3 years until I had a sense of who my customers were. People kept coming back and, you know, what they liked. And I got better at buying the right sizes and not selling out so fast of stuff because I knew to reorder things. And I really was this student of like the world of fashion. Everybody taught me something.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Deborah Koningsberger, who is, oh gosh, you're going to have to just listen to who she is. She is a businesswoman, and she's also just a fabulous human being, which I'd like to transition to about the fact that you got very involved in this not-for-profit called Hearts of Gold. So you're very successful now as a businesswoman. You own this boutique. And then what happens to you?
I am leading my life. I have two young kids. At the time when I started Hearts of Gold was officially incorporated in 2001. In 1994, though, I had this kind of, you know, epiphany, life-changing experience. Went to a Stevie Wonder concert and heard a song called Take the Time Out. That, coupled with the fact that the park that I used to go to with my kids in the neighborhood was a really, really run-down, horrible park, not safe, and just a crazy place. And there was a woman living in that park with her little girl in a cardboard box. And I just remember being so shocked at the thought that I'm a young mom and I have...
And I don't live in a box.
Yeah. And it wouldn't even occur to me that that was possible. How do you do that? Because just like you get up in the morning and how do you make breakfast? Where do you eat? What do you do? Where do you bathe your baby? I was shocked. It was just so... sad. And I basically gave this woman wide berth for a while because I didn't know what the story was. And I eventually...
What does that mean, I gave her wide berth?
You know, I just didn't get too close. I just kind of would...
But you
would
were observing her.
But I was,
her.
Yeah. I was seeing her. I was observing her. I didn't know if she was, you know, okay. If, you know, sometimes you try to talk to people and they just, you know,
sure.
don't want to talk to you or they're angry. You just don't know. And I had two young kids and I certainly wasn't going to put them at risk. So, but finally one day I gave her something to eat. I offered her, you know, something to eat and she... accepted. And, you know, I started talking to her and I would go to the park every day with my kids. And, you know, I just heard her story was so, she didn't want to be in a shelter. She didn't feel safe in a shelter. She had run away from this domestic violence situation. Her life was just so broken. And mine was so not. And I just thought, okay. And then sadly, I went back to the park one day, just, you know, after saying, see you tomorrow, whatever. And she wasn't there and she was gone. And I was so shocked and I was so sad and I kind of was a little depressed that I hadn't figured out, you know, a way to, I didn't know where she was. I didn't know where this little girl was. I didn't know where they'd end up. I just, you know, I was kind of a little forlorn. And then I decided that something needed to change. Hearing the Stevie Wonder song about homelessness and, you know, how we could all be a part of the solution, just things started to make sense to me. And I thought, well, okay, so I know a little bit about something here. You know, I'm doing this mother thing and I have a great mother. And I was then invited by Bobby Brown, makeup artist Bobby Brown, to do a seminar at a shelter. I then found out that I lived at 32nd and Madison. This shelter was on 28th between Madison and 5th. And who even knew that housed homeless moms and their kids? And she said, you know, Deb, I'm doing something... I'm doing these makeovers for these women and giving them product. And if you would come in and talk to them about fashion and how to dress to, you know, go to interviews and just, you know, general stuff, that'd be great. So I teamed up with Bobby. She invited me. I went over and met these moms and realized that this place existed 3 blocks from my home and between the park and the place where this all, you know, it just, everything kind
the
of.
The stars
like,
were kept, aligned
yeah,
again here for
it was
this.
Really like this perfect stormy
right.
kind of situation. And, 7 nights into that Stevie Wonder concert, because I went to every night of that concert and 7 nights of that song, I literally decided that I was going to look for something to do in my neighborhood to make a change. And I said to Bobby, you know, if you're doing these moms, they have kids here, maybe I can do something to help the kids. At the same time, there was a shelter, a drop-in center, actually, on 23rd Street called Peter's Place for frail elderly homeless. And I got involved with them by just kind of going down and volunteering, playing pool with the elderly and, you know, cooking Thanksgiving meals, just like I wanted to kind of put some elbow grease into the matter. I didn't want to.
And
didn't
get your feet wet, sort of.
I did. And I also didn't. It's not like I had money to be a philanthropist and throw dollars at this. So I figured I was going to throw energy behind it. And then that first Christmas, after having been to the shelter with Bobby, I decided that I was going to play Santa. And I took the profits from my business that year and I bought. At the time, the shelter had a 99-cent budget per child, and there were about 135 kids in the shelter. And, you know, it's a shelter that was there to provide them with a safe, clean place you know, to be. And that's what the shelter was. They certainly were not there to give them Christmas gifts. I understood that. But just was, to me, didn't make sense that a kid didn't have way too many gifts to open at Christmas time.
Sure.
So I thought, okay, so I can help on this end. And I bought, I literally was Santa. I mean, I got the names of all the kids. I got their ages. I got their sizes. I got their names. And I went to town and bought all these gifts and wrapped all these gifts and, you know, kind of showed up and did this Christmas party. And the director of the shelter was just like, oh, my God. It really is Christmas. And it felt so good to be able to make Christmas happen for someone else, you know? So I just wanted to kind of level the playing field a little bit. Interestingly enough, that experience was a bittersweet experience because I watched a little girl go over to her mom and say, you know, look what I got. And her mom, and shockingly responded, so what? And I, you know, remember that magnet that my mom had on the refrigerator that said, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And I thought, because we were basically giving gifts to the kids, because Christmas for me is about the kids. Subsequently, I spoke to Bobby and I said, you know, this really interesting thing happened. I said, and so what I'm going to do is Easter's coming up and I want the Easter bunny to come just like Santa came for Christmas. I said, but this time when the Easter bunny gives the basket to the kids, I'd love to have something for the moms and let there be this exchange. I also was working with Ivana Trump at the time and she had this great jewelry line. You know, I asked her if she would donate some pieces and everybody was super cooperative and just like, great. And they were like, absolutely. So when the Easter bunny gave the basket to the kids, the Easter bunny also gave a gift back to the moms. And then there was this beautiful like, oh, and look what I got too. And it was just, you know, fabulous.
There's a level playing field there
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And I felt like I decided, well, then mama's going to be happy and, you know, everybody will be happy.
And that's where Hearts of Gold
kind
of
came. And that's where Hearts, yeah. And so I just kept going, you know, the holidays and after a couple of years, it got, you know, really expensive. And, you know, I had a single store. And so I got my high school best friend involved. I got my college best friend involved.
And this one talked to this one, talked to this one.
And then everybody just started outreaching. And it's amazing to see what happens when you're passionate about something and that something is good. You know, people.
It's contagious.
Yeah, it is. And people really do want to do good stuff. They just, if you give them the venue, you know, everybody doesn't have the energy and the wherewithal to stop their lives and think about this stuff. But if you put it out there that you're doing it, so many people are happy to just support.
That's so true.
You know?
They want somebody to start it and then they'll join you.
Yeah.
And so then it wasn't all that difficult to start this nonprofit.
You know, it's interesting, right? So starting a nonprofit means starting another business. And again, we've clearly stated here that I had no kind of background in business. So here I was starting a whole other kind of business that I didn't know anything about. I was in the water again and trying to figure out how to swim once again. But, you know, I am not easily daunted. And I figured out that, okay, I'll just do what I know, right? So I've got a mom who needs milk. I will take money from you and I will buy milk and give it to the mom. And I wanted everything to be very direct and just grassroots. And, you know, the stories of these moms waiting on lines for everything and filling out forms. And it was just, the thought to me was so distasteful. I was like, okay, if you need a coat for your child today, you don't need a line and a form and a, you know, your baby's cold today, right?
Got it. Yeah.
So for me, it was just, I just wanted to be able to take it and give it to them and put it in their hands, literally. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what I did. I, you know, the shelters would identify for me, these moms would say, okay, this mom moved in last night. She's got two kids. They have no clothes. They ran away in the middle of the night from craziness. Listen, they don't have shoes, whatever. I would just hit the store, buy the thing, bring it to the shelter and put it in that mom's hand. And for me, it was just, I like to see the impact of what I'm doing. That's what makes me feel like I'm making a difference. So
you need immediate gratification.
I really do. Mm-hmm. I needed it for them. Mm-hmm. I wanted to fix the problem for them right away. So that's just how I kind of live my life. And all the people who know me, love me, put up with me, know it. So they know when I come knocking, I am serious and that there's a problem and that it's real and I'm going to fix it. And years of experience have taught them that, you know, if you do this thing, something great's going to happen on the other end for someone else.
Right.
And that's the success of Hearts of Gold, basically, even though with all the pitfalls and the things I didn't know about a nonprofit and all the laws and the governance and all of that, you know, I'm always smart enough to remember that I don't know everything. And there's a lot of some things that I don't know about certain things. So I, you know, pull from people who do. And I surround myself with people who are smart and who are experienced and who know the things I don't know and who are good advisors. And that's helped Hearts of Gold. This year, we're 20 years old. You know, it's gotten us to this point where we have a serious board and it's just amazing what we're doing. And a lot of lives have come through our hearts and our hands and our, you know, organization. And it's incredibly I have to say, you know, I have my two boys are 21 and 19. And so because Hearts of Gold is 20 years old, clearly they were raised doing this. And for me, the most pride that I get out of this is just knowing that my kids are such human beings. Like, they're such good. My children recognize immediately. They always reach out a hand to help. Mm-hmm. It's second nature to them. It's kind of who they are, what we do. And especially for boys, you know, you can kind of get wrapped up in, you know, and teenagers in general, right? But for me, my biggest joy is seeing that, you know, my kid would jump on a train from school. He was at New Haven at Yale, and he would come down on the train for 2 hours to take half hour's worth of pictures at an event we're doing for the moms and kids and get back on the train and go back up. And my friends say to me, he's coming down to take pictures for half hour. I say, you know, he doesn't know anything else. It's fine. He's good with it. It's just, it's what we do, right?
So how do people get involved with your organization, with your store, Thrifty Hog, as well as with Hearts of Gold?
So heartsofgold.org is our website. Mm-hmm. The Thrifty Hog is the most amazing resale store on the island of Manhattan, I'm telling you right now. It is so incredibly well curated. The stuff is fabulous. We get lots of awesome donations, new, used, vintage. We have a great celebrity board. They're donating things to us all the time. I mean, people are actually on their way to donate to other charities and see our store, and they're like, oh my God, I'm donating to you, love the cause, whatever. It's impactful because the Thrifty Hog is not just a resale store, but it is a program of Hearts of Gold. And that means that we actually train moms and give them job skills in this
Fabulous.
Store. So when you donate to the Thrifty Hog.
So you're literally one-stop shopping, yeah. You know, literally and figuratively.
Yeah. So you come in, you're helping, you know, mom is going to help you and she's getting training and it's giving something her something to put on a resume that's kind of weak or non-existent. Mm-hmm. We also have, as of very recently, we have what's called the Hearts of Gold Fresh Start University. So we have a fabulous, fabulous professor who's teaching this these women who are working for us. So they actually work and they get paid to go to classes twice a week for 3 hours. And they're learning, they're doing aptitude tests and figuring out what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are. We're then they have on-the-job training at the Thrifty Hog. And then we have companies that are partnering with us to say, okay, we'll give these moms internships. We're breaking cycles. That, for me, it's really important to break the cycle of homelessness through education because, you know what, I've kind of figured out after all these years that, you know, you got to teach a man to fish, number one. That's the most important gift you can give to someone. And secondly, without education, you're dead in the water. Poverty is something you cannot beat if you're not educated. You just don't know. You just don't know. Mm. And so breaking the cycle through education is our mantra. It's what we're doing. It's what we're going to do a lot more of. We're super excited. We have so many moms who are like thrilled to be in this program. We're working with a lot of four different shelters right now. So you can go to our website and check out all the, you know, things that have been written about us, the programs that we're doing. And we have fundraisers that we do, you know, in, that's how we raise our money, actually. We just had our kids walk. We have an annual gala. Our gala is on November 11th this year at the New York Stock Exchange. And, you know, my benefactors, American Realty Capital, I cannot shout their names enough from the roof, who have basically said, you know, we're going to take you there this year and help you get out of where you are right now and just launch this thing big time. And so it's very, we're in a very, very, very exciting, exciting, exciting place for Hearts of Gold. And so volunteer, donate your merchandise, and just, you know, always know that when you donate to Hearts of Gold, you are helping us change lives. It is so real. We're so grassroots. I mean, I literally go into women's homes and help them plug holes from rats with seal wool. We do the work. We don't just talk about it. We're there with them. My cell phone's always ringing. A situation, you know, I get, this is very cute. I got a text the other day that said, oh my God, Auntie Deborah, because a lot of them call me Auntie Deborah. Layla went on the potty for the first time. You know, it's great, right? This is one of my moms and she just, I'm her cheerleader and this is important for her to have somebody say, yay, yay. So, you know, it's, look, this life that we're living, this for me is just not it. It's clearly about something else, something greater than this space what we're in right now. And I just want to make sure that when I leave here and however I leave here, that somebody benefited from my being here, not just myself, you know?
All I have to say is, if you look up Inspiration in the Dictionary, Deborah Koningsberger's picture will be there. I could talk to you for days, but we've run out of time. You're an amazing broad, Deborah.
Thank you, Auntie Deborah.
You really are. It has been nothing short of a real pleasure to get to meet you, hear your story, and how you inspire the world and change the world. You're a real class act.
Thank you so much
for coming.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at the 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.